Hello, everyone. This is Brenda speaking. Welcome to the RDS Who Is 2 subgroup call for Who Is 1 recommendation number 4 for compliance. Call takes place on May 30th, 2018 at 1600 UTC. Attending the call today is Susan, Carlton, and Alan. From ICANN.org, we have Alice, Jean-Baptiste, Lisa, Steve, and Brenda. And we have apologies from Erica and Thomas will be delayed. I'd like to remind you today's call is being recorded. Please state your name before speaking, and I'll turn the call over to you, Susan. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Brenda. Once again, thanks for joining. I'm hoping you've had a chance to at least review the report. It still needs a lot of work. I know that I took another look at it, and there's definitely some areas that I copied and pasted and didn't delete and things like that. So I'll work on that and try to have that out again by Friday. But one of the things I wanted to cover, and if there's areas in the report you would like to cover, just let me know. But was the proposed recommendations. There was two that we discussed, recommendation 1 and 2. I didn't copy out into the slide, these slides, because we discussed those in Brussels in April, but there are several more that really rough draft recommendations that, you know, I've entered here. I think I've came up with 6 more, but these could also be grouped and made to be one larger recommendation. So I don't know that we really have 8 recommendations. We may have one large recommendations with lots of components to it. So I don't know if, you know, would it help just to go through each one and I'll sort of explain the background, or, you know, does anybody have any questions and concerns right off the bat? So I don't see any hands up if I'm reading my little Zoom.
Susan, this is Carlton. Can I?
Yes, please.
Yes, I hope you saw the response on VOCUP on the report. Did you have a look at, get a chance to have a look at it?
You know what? I did, and I'd forgotten about that when I had put these recommendations in this, in the PowerPoint, but that was also last week or several days ago. So do you remember, I could pull it up, but do you remember what he was?
Yeah, he had quite a few concerns.
Okay, let's see.
Susan, it's Alan. Can I suggest you sort of either introduce each one, not with a lot of background. I think most of us understand where we came from. Just introduce each one and give us all an opportunity to comment on the one by one.
Right. That was my plan. So let me pull up Volker's and then I will. But let's start with the ones I have up first.
Sure.
And then I could also pull up Volker's in the meantime. And let me just get back here. So as you know that, you know, I've expressed concern and several others that when a domain name is suspended due to inaccurate information or for any reason, then that inaccurate information stays in the Who Is record basically forever until the domain is either deleted, or if it was simply an inaccurate information issue, then you know, there is an, I think after the 15 days the registrant could come back and say, wait, I didn't mean that, I didn't see this, and I would and I want to change the information, and then the, you know, at least the email address would be validated. But you often see examples where there are, you know, the domain may have been suspended for abuse, but it also has inaccurate information. And I always reported those. And therefore, but because it was suspended, there's no action taken. So in this recommendation, what the intention of this is that that it should be updated to a new status and the inaccurate data removed if there is inaccurate data in the WHOIS record on other suspensions, and you know, we don't really have a role there. And then I'm not sure that a domain name cannot be unsuspended. I don't think it's clear in everything I've read that a registrar just can't sort of willy-nilly go, okay, this has been suspended for a long time, and we're going to unsuspend it for whatever reason without a WHOIS verification. I don't think, even if that is the rule, I don't think there's any process to stop that from happening. So it looks like, Alan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. A number of things. I think in the introduction you said that this should be if there is inaccurate information regardless of why it was suspended, but you say if it was suspended due to inaccurate information. So which do you mean?
So I guess what I mean is, and it's good to clarify this, is oftentimes I would report a domain name for inaccurate information, even though I knew it was suspended. It was obviously that either the name servers were not there or it had some sort of suspended domain name servers information. And but it still had inaccurate information. So I would report that and they would say, oh, compliance would say, we can't take any action because it's already suspended. There's no other action to take. I'm suggesting that it doesn't matter why it was suspended, that inaccurate information should be removed, and whether or not that be, replaced with a registrar or some sort of course, you know, with GDPR, this may not be as big of an issue, but it could still be down the way. And whether or not that be registrar information or some sort of information removed, you know, some sort of status in each of the registrant fields or, you know, contact fields saying information removed due to inaccuracy or something, inaccurate data or something.
Okay, then why don't we phrase it that if inaccurate information is reported and verified, then the domain must be suspended or otherwise, I'm not quite sure what the right words are there, and may not be unsuspended until that information is corrected. So don't make the trigger inaccurate information be reported, not suspended due to inaccurate information.
Okay.
That's my feeling. First of all, if you go through the triage, this is Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
The triage is there a policy that you must not have inaccurate information and domain in the WHOIS record? Yes. So for whatever reason, the inaccurate information must be healed. And whether it is on suspension or before suspension, that is irrelevant to my life. It is inaccurate, it must be healed.
Yeah. And by the way, with regard to GDPR, I found a domain this week that has a privacy service. And that privacy service has an inaccurate information, which is not all that uncommon. All right, so that's point number one. Point number two is I think we need to be specific. If we mention, use the word suspended, I think we need to identify exactly what kind of hold we are talking about or holds if there are multiple ones. I don't think suspended is a technical term in terms of domain name status. You know, it's on something hold or whatever. So I think we want to be more accurate there if indeed we can be. And the next part is what are the mechanics of this? Clearly, ICANN cannot set a flag on a domain. So we can't say it cannot be unsuspended until we verify that the data is accurate. So the wording on the on your second sentence is not cannot be unsuspended, but may not be unsuspended or taken off hold, whatever the technical term is, until what? Who is verification is completed by whom? The registrar or by ICANN?
Registrar.
The registrar is required to ensure that the record is correct. And insofar as the record is remains incorrect, it's incumbent on the registrar to do it. I read Volker's thing and I couldn't understand why the argument, because it seems to me you are compelled by contract to have domain names with accurate records. And to the extent that the record is inaccurate, you are duty bound to make the record accurate.
What exactly did Volker say? I don't have it in front of me.
He says cancellation is not necessarily mean the data was incorrect in many cases. The registrar simply ignored the message, saw it too late or forwarded, and he gave all kind of other reasons. That's going down into the weeds. To my mind, the issue is there is an inaccurate record. If that is verified, you must fix the record and make it accurate. Boom, it's done.
Right. Unfortunately, and Lisa, you're up next, but unfortunately, sometimes the registrant will come back and go, yes, that is my accurate data, but it's not, which is another issue I'm not sure exactly how to get at. But Lisa, do you want to go ahead? You're on mute if you, or at least you're, we can't hear you if you're talking.
Thank you. Sorry. I was unmuted on my phone, but not on Zoom. Yeah. This is Lisa for the record. I believe that the status code you were looking for previously was server hold. And I was also going to say what Carlton said, that I think it looked like Volker's primary objection was the domain might be suspended because the registrant didn't actually respond in a timely manner to the reminder, not that the data was actually inaccurate.
But then, to me, that's a different issue than inaccurate data.
Yeah, I would agree.
If you're suspended, okay.
Yeah, but it's Alan. If someone files a claim of inaccurate data, then and ICANN compliance looks at it and says, yeah, it looks inaccurate to me, then it is inaccurate until the registrant responds, isn't it?
That's my argument, Alan. At some point, somebody's going to verify that the data is inaccurate, and then the inaccuracy must be healed. And that is in the province of the registrar. The registrar has to take an action against the registrant to ensure the breach is healed, because it is a breach to have inaccurate voice data.
Okay, Volker says, I see no harm in having false data if the who is suspended.
I disagree.
Well, but the question is, how do you remedy that?
Go ahead, Alan. Finish.
Yeah, I was going to say that if the registrant doesn't respond, I'm not sure the registrar is allowed to just unilaterally change that who is information. That's akin to hijacking.
No, and so they would do that, but you can change the status code and add a status code to say, not only for whatever reason you are suspended, you are also suspended because we would have suspended you anyways because you have inaccurate who is data.
But that leaves the data there. That doesn't change the data.
Yes, but the point is, would you be required to make effort to have the data accurate, made accurate? And I think, yes, you would be.
Who's the you? Sorry.
The registrar. There are two compliance. There are two actions. They're separate actions. For whatever the first one was for the suspension, okay. But you also have another. When it's brought to your attention that the suspended domain name has an accurate record, you would have raised another reason to either keep it suspended or to invoke the procedure to have the data.
Carlton, we all agree on that, I think. Or maybe Volker doesn't, but everyone on this call, I think, agrees. But Susan's words say, or somebody along the way said, the data must be changed. Not the data, not the domain cannot be unsuspended until the data changes, but the data maybe must be changed. And I don't think you can require that the data be altered without the registrant taking action. So
I
that
agree.
May mean, and you know, I'm agreeing that regardless of why it was originally suspended, it should not be unsuspended until the data is corrected. But that's different from saying the data must be removed.
No, I don't agree.
Susan?
So maybe the compromise is that a status, the contact details where the inaccurate data claim is made. So if I file one and say, this is not the registrant because it's brand X, and I know brand X did not register this domain name. So in that field for brand X, it should say inaccurate data. And then if even it's suspended, the problem here is, and you know, not to pull up GDPR and, you know, just only in instances where it's, you know, favors my argument, but they're using other people's data. If not, you know, it's somebody else's address, or it's not an existing address. Or, you know, I mean, there is identity theft in Whois records, and that shouldn't be left standing. It should not be left there because, I mean, I personally have examples, and it's few and far between, where it was like somebody said, wow, look what Facebook did because, you know, their domain name got suspended. It's not our domain name.
Okay.
We can't get the data out of the record.
Let me ask a question. Is there only one status that will put something on hold, or are there multiple ones? In other words, can you have a domain on hold for multiple reasons?
Yes.
But is it indicated that way?
Yes,
and
yes.
Also, I mean, I've seen domain names suspended in a variety of ways, I think. It could be a server hold, but it could just change. I've seen the registrar change the name servers to something that says, you know, suspended registration, you know, and it's in the format of a name server, but it basically tells you that this was suspended.
Yeah, but that's
not
vague.
Why.
That's how they, my recollection is, Carlton, that there is a status field which can say that it is not suspended or on hold, but it cannot have multiple values at the same time.
Yeah,
current,
and Lisa's got her hand up here. So, Lisa?
Yeah, thank you, Susan. This conversation is actually bringing back some of the conversation that we had at the face-to-face meeting, where I believe it was identified that the finding here and the problem is that you cannot tell that the domain is on hold because of inaccurate data.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can state that as, you know, the problem that you have identified, and I don't know if you need to go to the step of explaining how the problem should be solved in policy, but to say that policy should provide a way for you to determine that the domain is has been suspended or is on hold due to inaccurate data.
I think I agree with that.
I agree with Lisa. That's the way to do it. By the way, it goes to the next complaint that Volker had, which was that you can't compel the registrar to do something that outside of contracts and obligations. So I think that answers the question very neatly.
Sorry, we are making recommendations to ICANN. They can be addressed. They could be addressed if ICANN were to follow them. It could be addressed by negotiating a contract change or by forcing a contract change through a PDP that obviously would have to succeed. What is in today's contract is irrelevant.
I agree with that.
The whole concept of a PDP is to change the contract because the contract doesn't allow something or doesn't require something. That's extraneous.
Yeah, well, there's no lag between your opinion and mine, Alan. We agree on that. I'm just mentioning Volker, who is from the registry side of the business, what he had to say on it. I disagree.
Then we'll have that conversation when we're actually all here together.
Yep. Or Volker has time for a
call. We're a half hour into the hour call. We need to go on to another item.
Yep,
Susan, stop letting me interfere and run your own meeting.
So I do have another question, and I put it in the wrong place, but can a suspended registration be renewed? I couldn't find the answer to that, and I was hoping, you know, we could get that from from Volker, but and I can ask around more, but I was just sort of digging through things. Just because it's suspended, can you not renew it? Would be, you know, good to know too.
Well,
did anybody have any clue on that?
Volker says they can be. Suspended domain names can and will be renewed.
So maybe we need to...
This was Volker's comment. It says it can. They can and will be renewed.
You'd have to be able to renew a suspended domain name, because otherwise, if it was suspended for a reason that proves spurious, you will have lost your name because of that process. Sounds like a dandy way to for someone to steal a domain name.
Yeah.
Well, and it could be that, you know, the bad guys don't renew a suspended registration, but I do think that's sort of a loophole in some ways too. So.
It shouldn't remove the suspension.
No, it shouldn't remove the suspension, but then it's also not deleted. Where actually, I think a registrar has the right to delete a domain name if a registrant doesn't respond. Let me go back and check that.
Because of the complaint, yes, that is indeed the case.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you think of the process on UDRP, where if you have file UDRP round about the renewal date, the registrar has to be able to renew.
Renew, yes.
Same sort of situation.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So and Lisa's got a chat here.
I was just trying to help you remember what you agreed on 3.
Okay, that sounds good. I made some notes, but they are not that clear. So, does anybody disagree with what Lisa put up there?
No. No, that's okay. Good.
So recommendation 4 was just in response to a question we asked the compliance team is, you know, what would be helpful if, you know, what other information would be helpful in an inaccuracy report? And because such a high number, over 50%, are not relevant. You know, it's not really an inaccuracy report, or they don't have the relevant information included. So, you know, I just additional outreach and education on how to file it, who is an accuracy report. And that we could move that into the outreach if we wanted to.
Yeah. It's Alan. I'm happy with what Lisa wrote on three, and I was going to comment four probably belongs in outreach, but we can juggle that at the last moment. So yes, I support it.
Right. Okay. And then, go ahead, Carlton.
No, if you look at data accuracy report from Lily, that would probably be a part of that too. I'm thinking number four. We may have to seed those to outreach and to data accuracy in this.
Okay. And then on recommendation five, it just seems like, I mean, I can remember asking for a bulk who is an accuracy tool, and maybe this is my own inability to find things on ICANN's website, but I was surprised. So once I really looked for it, I found the bulk accuracy inaccuracy reference to that tool. But I do think that they could also, you know, maybe in outreach, do publicize and encourage the use of a bulk who is an accuracy tool. Because right now there's only 10 vetted and 3 used last year.
Yeah, that was something that they used to ration out and, held it close to their breast. And, the reason being, although the inaccuracy reports are submitted in bulk, they are handled one by one. So they really were worried about and have been worried about, someone submitting 10,000 requests, all of which are spurious, but they have to be handled one by one. So that comes back to an issue of, trusted something or others. And so I think we're going to have to flesh this one out a little bit, but I support the intent.
Okay. And Carlton?
Yes, I support the intent, but you take note of what Volker is saying, that there's a manageability component to it, because he said, you can have a tool that can do one single ticket for 300 domains, but if it's the same complaint, that makes it easier to manage. If it's different complaints across that 300, it becomes a lot harder to triage. What he's pointing out is that not every registrar has a tool that will allow them to winnow through all the complaints and locate them where they should be in bulk. I think that's reasonable.
I think that also is he's talking about the registrar end. We're talking about the interface between the person filing the complaint and compliance. Right. And that comes down to what I was saying of ICANN treats each of those as a single complaint. So if I file a complaint saying this, according to domain tools, this registrar has 14,000 domains that all have the same invalid information, which is quite common because, obviously, their privacy provider or pseudo privacy provider may in fact have invalid information. They get filed by the time they get to the registrar, they're 14,000 individual complaints.
Yeah.
So I think this comes down to compliance needs to think about how they handle bulk complaints. And that's not just on the complainant side, but on the registrar side.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's going to need some refining, but the intent I think is right on.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Susan, Lisa, their hand raised.
Oh, sorry, Lisa. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I'm actually hearing potentially two different related recommendations. Mm-hmm. The one that you have, which is targeted towards, making potential users more aware of the bulk inaccuracy reporting tool, and then. What Volker is saying sounds to me like a different recommendation that is aimed at making it easier for registrars to process inaccuracy reports related to the same domain or related to the same problem.
That's correct. That's exactly what I was bringing up. In my view, you could seed the outreach side to, as I said, data accuracy or to the outreach. part in Alan that Alan is leading, but you could take up this issue of having a tool engineered so that it has a it's more the efficacy of the use of it is good for both sides. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think Lisa's right. It is two different issues. Both of them, however, I think are symptomatic of the fact that, and I don't think we can handle this with a recommendation, although I would like to figure out how to word one, is symptomatic of the fact that compliance is not coming to us or to the GNSO and say, this is what we need to do our job better. We can't do it with the current policy or contracts. Can you do something to make this happen? And we never hear that from compliance. They may put some of their wish list in when there are private negotiations, but we certainly never see it anywhere else. And I think that's a symptom of the problem, that they're not proactive in looking for ways to improve the situation. And I don't know if we can have a recommendation to say that, but it's certainly something I feel strongly, and it's been the case for a very long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So can we accept Lisa's suggestion that we carve out to another recommendation?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so too.
And I'd like to put a placeholder recommendation is to essentially say, can we recommend something that compliance acts more proactively in developing tools and policies to enable them to do their job properly better?
Let's see, why not?
Tools are within their bounds already, but policy and contractual changes are not something they seem to view as they should be proactive on.
All right. Now, I think that's a good one. All right. Can we go to the next slide? So this we talked about in Brussels, assess the grandfather domains, see if this is a problem. If so, a new policy should be to ensure all should be created. I leave out so many words when I'm drafting things. It's ridiculous. Should be created to ensure all GTLDs adhere to the requirements of a registrant data collection in the 2013 RAA, and that they have to adhere to them within 12 months.
Susan, related to this, have we ever gotten the definitive date where the 2009 RAA disappears?
In the grandfathered domain?
No. It's related. It's not the same thing.
Oh.
RAAs only can last for 5 years. And I believed that an RAA must be renewed with the current RAA. So shouldn't somewhere around 2018, the last 2009 RAA disappear?
I do, but I don't see the impact on the grandfathered domain name because...
No, you're right. I was just the opportunity to ask that question.
Lisa might have a better, I think you're right, but I have not looked into that specifically.
The answer about the deprecation of the 2009 RAA, I believe, I don't remember the date, but I believe it was one of the first questions and answers addressed in the briefing. And it does not necessarily apply to grandfather.
No, it doesn't, because the grandfather is in the 2013. If I remember correctly,
well,
anyway.
But I'm trying to figure out why is it important here?
It was a red herring. Forget it. I'll go back and look at the notes, and if it's important, I'll bring it up again. My apologies.
Okay.
So what I do think is important that all domain registration, no matter what RAA they were registered under or what date they were registered, have to adhere to the new rules. And it's been
5 years since the 2013 RAA has been put in place, you know, and most of the registrars have signed on. There might be, well, what? It 2009, to your point, Alan, may have expired. So we're not even dealing with 2009 RAA, but these domain names only have to comply with that requirement.
Is it only domains that have not been renewed, or is it all domains that are grandfathered?
No, only domains that are not renewed. Everybody selling at the new GTLDs must sign the 2013 RAA, and any domain that is going to be renewed is renewed under the auspices of the 2013 RAA.
Okay, so we're looking at a 10-year period, essentially, for that one.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's the way it is. That if it was registered under the, because what staff told me, what I'd heard from staff, was that the intent during the negotiation was that upon renewal of the domain name, then the domain would have to adhere to the 2013 RAA.
Yes, that's what they're saying, but it's 2 years. It's two terms.
But they don't. There was pushback from the registrars who said, no. If it was registered under the 2009 RAA rules, we don't have to go back and ask our registrants to update their information comply with the 2013.
That's new to me. I've always heard that you, when renewal, you renew on the 2013.
But look, either way, we have a problem, because either if Susan's right, then it never gets fixed, or if Carlton is right, then it may take another 5 years to get fixed, because domains could have been good for 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah. But, and I agree with that, but I don't really know if it's a problem.
Well,
if people are just proactively putting their information in there and complying with the 2013, so then it would be a non-starter. But in the ARA, the R's, the Who Is the ARS report, it definitely, 40% of those chosen do not have to comply.
Okay, but did they comply anyway? We did. I thought we asked that question.
I didn't get an answer to that question when I asked.
Okay. This is Lisa.
Lisa, go ahead.
Go ahead, Lisa.
I just wanted to say that my recollection is that the grandfathered records simply aren't examined by ARS once they're determined to be grandfathered. So there is no data on whether or not those fields were populated for the records that were grandfathered and tested by an R cycle.
Yep.
Susan, may I?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is a no-brainer. We make a recommendation. If data accuracy has any import at all, it must be addressed. And if ICANN board decides not to pursue it, or the registrars, you know, make a case why not, fine, that may happen. But I think we have to say that accuracy matters and that has to be fixed. Now, if indeed the majority of those who are grandfathered don't have a problem, then it's not an issue. If it is an issue, then we need to fix it. So,
if you look at what Lisa has posted from Volker's email, and obviously I did not read all of his email, you know, I think he's making the argument they made back in 2013. Highly unfeasible due to requirement to touch hundreds and thousands of customers to basically ask them to add or change formatting on certain data. To me, it's like, who cares if you have to touch hundreds of thousands of registrations?
You have to send out a Who Is reminder every year. So you are raising the issue with registrants.
Yeah, so, but notice how Volker talked about, he talks about the formatting of the data. That's a different thing than saying that the data is inaccurate.
Well, yes, but the formatting is how you know it's accurate.
Yes, but well, you notice the technical way that he gets under the wire with the argument.
But this isn't even addressing accuracy, in my opinion. This recommendation would be, you know, look at, yes, there are formatting requirements in 2013 RAA, but this recommendation would say all domain name registrations should comply with the same rules, basically. I mean, that's the highlight for me. And there should be no grandfathering.
That's what Alan, I think, is suggesting, that we attack the problem that way.
Okay.
Look, if indeed the current rules are that they need to fix it at renewal time, then we don't have a problem. There aren't that many domains that are registered for 10 years. There are plenty, but not that many. If Susan is right, and they argued and made the case that they should not have to do it at renewal, I'm sorry. You're accepting someone's money. It's time to do some work.
Yeah, that completely agree with you. Okay, so I'll flesh this out a little bit more. Because what I didn't do is go through and, you know, and follow all the other fields that are required for a recommendation. So let me flesh it out a little bit more, and then I'll send it back to all of you.
This may be one where we don't get unanimity, so be it.
Yeah, I agree. And then all policies, recommendation 7, all policies implemented should require metrics, measurement, auditing, tracking, reporting, and enforcement by the compliance team. And this may not fit in compliance, it does in my mind. But, you know, this came up with the consistent labeling policy. There's no tracking. There's no metrics. There's no nothing. And it just seems like if you're going to put a policy in place, you got to know if people are actually following it. Right? Which gets us back to only reactive enforcement and not proactive.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how you word this. Not all policies are such that one can
have a metric on them.
Put metrics on them.
Yeah, I see that too. But
I mean, if you look at as an example, Thick Who Is, you know, said, you know, we will go to Thick Who Is. Ignore the current status. You know, that's either going to get done or not done. And you don't have to measure it on an ongoing basis afterwards. I mean, usually we use words like as applicable.
As far as possible. I was just suggesting to say, you just say as far as possible. Policies implemented should, and you follow. Sure.
So I would argue with the who is that, you know, I mean, someone should go back and say, is every registrar, you know, providing the data, you know, yeah, to the registry, the thick data to the registry? If they're not, they're not following the policy. You know, I mean, that would be a fairly simple one to figure out, but still there's a compliance issue there. So, but okay, we can add as applicable or as far as possible. And then recommendation, unless we don't have, do you have other comments on that? I'm sorry.
No.
Recommendation 8.
Susan?
Yes, Lisa.
I just wanted to draw your attention to Volker's comment on recommendation 7. He believes that this was already addressed within the GNSO.
Okay, so let me look at that. But we know that it may have been addressed. So we'll look to see it. And that's 2015. You know, we have one policy that I think should be.
But can I ask, how is this addressed in the GS?
How is this addressing the GNSO implies that ICANN compliance should, as far as possible, keep metrics and policies? That's where the disconnect is to me. Does the GNSO says that ICANN should keep compliance should measure it? Is that what he's saying here? I'm not sure.
Part of the problem with this is, and if I look at the domain renewal PDP, is we did not require that things be reported, so there is no way to measure them. And of course, there would have been significant pushback at that point if we had required that registrars have to report on various things. So part of the problem is it's not necessarily always something that compliance can simply either audit or measure without the involvement of the contracted party.
Yeah, I'm just reading the summary for the link you provided to, and this speaks about the issue report, and it's recommended the RAP working group. The GNSO and larger ICANN community in general create and support uniform problem reporting and report tracking processes. That, to me, doesn't get to the essence of this. I'm sorry, Jean-Baptiste.
No, Susan, I just wanted to mention that we have two hands. One, I believe, is an old one from Ellen, and the other one is from Lisa.
And we're we're almost over the hour.
Yeah. So, Lisa.
Yeah, Susan, I wasn't familiar with this one either, but just quickly reviewed it, and it doesn't seem like it's squarely the same thing that you're recommending. And also, mm-mm. I note that the resolution adopted was that the council wouldn't initiate a PDP at this point, but would wait until the end of a three-year plan period. So we would now be at the end of that period anyway.
Right.
I'm still aghast as to how that has anything to do with a directive for ICANN compliance. It has nothing to do with it.
No, this is not necessarily a directive for compliance. This may well be a directive for the PDPs to make sure that new policy is structured such that it is possible to report and have metrics.
So maybe it's two recommendations or a lengthy recommendation.
Well, there's certainly two components. One is that policy should integrate metrics, measurement, and reporting to ensure that the policy is effective in addressing the original issue. And the second is when such reporting is possible, when such measurement is possible, compliance should track it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and the recommendation 8 isn't really a recommendation, but I put it in anyway. But I am concerned on the ARS that in their report that submission rates are really low in the Global South. And so is it lack of knowledge, which goes back to the outreach again, of the inaccuracy tool, or is it just not an issue for anyone in the Global South? I would think it was, you know, more of a lack of knowledge, but.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, but because I think in the Global South, we probably have less, the footprint of GTLD is much, much smaller comparatively to above the equator in the northern hemisphere. And where you have activity, the main activity is usually CCTLD.
Yeah, I don't really know enough about this one.
Yeah. Let me take another look at it.
Yeah.
And maybe
I don't think it's a recommendation, but it's certainly something that we want to keep our radar until we figure out what if anything we're going to do with it.
And I know Lily reviewed the same report, and so she may have something. I haven't had a chance to read her report, so on data accuracy. So could there could be something she may have also put something in there about this. So.
I can't recall seeing it. I'll have a look again. I read the report, but I can't recall seeing any correlation to this. But I'll have another look.
Okay. Thanks, Carlton. All right. So I think this was a good discussion. I'll do another draft of the report. I'll update these recommendations and fill out all the fields that I was supposed to do the first time. And then, I was like, I had too much to do, but I thought if you guys just throw these out, then I don't want to have gone to that work. But
we got to have something to do after July.
I don't know about you, but I got tons right now. Yes.
Lisa has her hand raised.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to note we're wrapping up the call, but at some point we do need to address Volker's comments on recommendations 1 and 2.
So I can respond to his email and when I send out the next draft of the report. Or do you feel like I should respond to his email?
Can you remind us what the recommendation is? Sorry.
Sure. This is Lisa. Means- Recommendation 1 is that all new policies should be required to be measured, audited, and tracked by the compliance team. The consistency labeling and display policy requires a registrar abuse contact, email address, and contact phone. Would be possible to include these fields in the audit of a registrar. And Volker's concern was that the review team shouldn't recommend enforcement of a registry policy against registrars. He thought we were mixing up registrar policy and registry policy.
Yeah. Well, if it's registry policy, we should enforce it against registries.
We should say that. So that's the distinction. We say this is for the registries as opposed to the registrars. That's how I read that.
I mean, if we have a policy that is for the registries and the registries are therefore obliged to pass it on to the registrars, that's a registry issue. And if they are not doing that appropriately, then we have cause for complaint. Just like, you know, we oblige registrars to make certain requirements of resellers.
We have RARA agreements between registry and registrar agreements. Those exist. And to the extent that they exist, there is a cause of action that can be flowed through those agreements. That's the way it works.
We don't write those agreements, but we can make sure that they enforce the parts that are in our agreements. And what is recommendation number 2?
That's right.
Recommendation number 2 was require all domain name registrations adhere to the WHOIS requirements in the 2013 RAA.
Which is basically, it looks like I confused, yeah, I confused those and added it as a second another recommendation. So.
Right, it's right. Tied to the one that he was arguing about in 6 or 7. That's it.
Right.
Yeah, the 12-month period may be unreasonable, but a requirement that it has to be done sometime is not unreasonable. You know, at the very least, you know, upon renewal or after 5 years or something like that.
Okay.
I tend to say they do a WHOIS checkup every year. It should be done there, but I'm willing to be a little bit more flexible than that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with messaging in from the start, though. They don't like to be prescription. They don't like prescriptions, but there's nothing wrong with saying that there's a vehicle that you already have.
I mean, to me, this is, you know, we're adhering to a 9-year-old RAA at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you both need to go, or all of us need to go. But I really appreciate all the input. And with Lisa's help and her note keeping in the chat, I will incorporate this into the report and turn that around and get it back out to you and address Volker's comments.
Good meeting. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks all.
Yes, sir. It was good. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you all. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.